Beckery, he was the chairperson of the composite engineering department for many years, but he's so much more than chairman of the music composite department. I want to tell a brief story about him to illustrate the kind of human being he is. In the Sudan, at one time, for many, many decades, it was divided into two parts, the Arab North and the Black Sudanese South, Black African South. They eventually got their independence, the South did. And in the South, there are many, many, many ethnic groups, aren't there? Dozens, aren't there? There were two particularly large ethnic groups, the Nuer and the Dinkas. But there's also a group called the Anuaks. It'd be like the Croatians living in Winona with the Germans and the Polish. They were a very small ethnic group in the South Sudan, weren't they? And Beckery heard about a man in Switzerland who was compiling the oral cultural history of the Anuaks, and he supported this man for many years with a huge amount of money. That's why he's here speaking today, to replenish his money. And he even brought that individual to the campus some years ago, didn't you? That just shows the kind of person our speaker is today, and I welcome my friend Beckery here.
My name is Beckery Abdelmajid. As John said, I came to Winona, one of the people to start the composite engineering program in 1990. We didn't know where this program was going to go or not. a few years ago, we invited somebody who was working with Ford motor vehicles, and he told us that when they first made the car, they didn't know whether it's going to go this way or this way. So we started the program, and now it is functional. It's a good program. It has served the community for a long time, and hopefully it will serve the community and the industry in Winona for longer. When John invited me, I didn't know what to say or where to go or how to organize my talk. And my wife Margaret, who's hiking in Sedona, Arizona right now, told me, why don't you divide the periods of your life like in chunks of like a decade each time? So I thought, yeah, that might be a good idea. But I want to start with the background of my heritage and my background. So I am a Nubian, where, as John said, it is in northern Sudan. I don't know if this is going to show the Sudan here. And so this is the greater Sudan, north of us is Egypt, and the Nubian civilization was started around here. Actually, this here is a better depiction of the Nubian Empire. It started about in the 8th century BC, close to the, towards the end of the Ice Age. And this whole area, which is now is a desert, this was all green, forested. And the Nile River was much, much larger. The valley was just larger. Just like where the Mississippi was here. So it was a fertile land, and it was one of the earliest civilization for the people who settled there. It coincided also with the Egyptian civilization in the north, and they were sometimes rivals, fighting each other, and sometimes living in peace, exchanging information and exchanging culture and exchanging knowledge. But you will hear more about the Egyptian civilization, even though they say the roots of the Egyptian civilization came from the Nubian civilization. So the Nubian in these periods of war, they actually ruled over Egypt and ruled over all the way up to Palestine at that time. And some historians would say that they ruled over Egypt for a century, and some people would say for some decades. They interacted with the, as we said, the Egyptian, the Greek civilization, the Roman civilization, the Ethiopian civilization, and they were among the first people to smelt iron. So they had, it's called the land of gold until now. They are mining gold there. But they were very skillful in irons, and I will read a few things here. This is a book by a friend of mine. He's a Nubian also. His name is Arif Jamal. He lives in Berkeley and teaches over there. So he wrote a poem about the kingdom of Kush, which is a part of the Nubian civilization at the time. And he writes, "And in the 7th century BC, the Kushite leader, General Bianchi, rising to a threat of war from the north, surged forth with his expert archers, his finest horses and charioteers, and built a tower next to city walls for his bowmen to shoot down from." The Nubians were known as the bow people. They were very good archers. "Conquering all of Egypt, over which Nubia ruled for 60 years through the 25th or Kushite dynasty, during which they rebuilt many fallen temples, repaired the old papyri, and protected art. Moses was married to a Kushite woman, and he revered his father-in-law, Yithro, who taught the Hebrews how to organize themselves as tribal people, how to travel through the wilderness at large." So this shows you a glimpse of the Nubian civilization at the time. The Nubian influence over northern Sudan, southern Egypt, continued until about the 6th century. That is when the Arabs came and invaded Egypt. Before that, Egypt was under the Roman Empire. Rome ruled Egypt for about 7 centuries after that. But also the Egyptians, just like the Nubians, were influenced by the Greek civilization. And there was a lot of exchange between the Greeks and the Nubians and the Egyptians. At around the when the Arabs came to it and invaded Egypt to spread Islam, this was about 639, 641. They took over Egypt and they expanded in North Africa all the way to Morocco. So they conquered areas of Algeria, Tunisia, and so on. They were not able to go south at all, but they established the rule, they spread the religion, the language of Arabic replaced the old Nubian language. They tried to go south, but they were repelled by the Nubian fiercely. They called the Nubians the eye shooters, because no matter what kind of mask you come, even if you have a face mask, the Nubians were able to shoot their arrows in the eyes of the invading soldiers. So this continued until about 1276, when the Arabs got tired of fighting the Nubians and made a peaceful agreement and told them, okay, you just let us go through to the rest of the River Nile, and we will leave you in peace. So they did, and then they kind of spread the religion, the Islamic religion, in the south. At that time, the Nubians have been, they had their own religion, their own God, and they were also influenced by the Hebrews and the Christians and the Ethiopians civilization and religion. But eventually, of course, the Islam came creeping from the south, and they became the Nubian adopted Islam. I will read some aspect of that here. The Nubian used to also worship the Nile, because the Nile was it provides life for them. So this is again from Arif's book. The banks are lush with flourishing bush and wild acacia and many tall date palms. The barefoot women walk in long jarjar down a sandy path to stand beside the river's edge. One woman eats a little rice and hurls the rest into the Nile as an appreciation. One woman dips a golden ring for offering to please the Nile god, who gives fertility, though he is not the god of all. That is Nur. So the Nubian name for God is Nur. That is Nur, great Nur of old Nubia, and Kush and Meroe, all one, from the long before the rule of the pharaohs. Nur was loved and honored along Nile sands. Nur was the one. What of Muhammad then, and Allah, the Quran? One learns that now, but Nur was old. Islam is like a glaze on Nubia, where ways of Nur are old and deep from long before the time of the pharaohs. Did Fatma Maria, this was his grandma, did Fatma Maria pray as Muslim prayed? She did, and made obeisance 5 times a day, but spoke of Nur. Nur's was the way, Nur reigned. So even though they adopted the Islam, they have become Muslims, but they still yearn for their old God. So around then, the Egypt also became colonized by the Ottoman Empire, and about 1882, the British invaded Egypt and took it under control, and also came to the Sudan, took over the Sudan. But there was much more resistance against the British in Sudan. In 1885, the Mahdi, who was also a Nubian, went to the Western Sudan, created a big army, and came and drove the British, killed General Gordon in Khartoum, drove the British away. And he took over the country for about 14 years. His rule was so harsh that the people, especially the Nubians, didn't like his rule. And they somehow invited the British back. So the British came in 1889, ruled the Sudan until 1955. And in 56, they basically left because of there was always uprising against them and so on. So this Sudan got its independence in 1956. During the Mahdi regime, the Mahdi beat the British, and they became very strong, very arrogant. They said, "We're going to invade Egypt." So they recruited many people. Among them was my grandfather, who went to invade Egypt, and of course, they got beat before they got there. And my father then settled in Nubia, got married there. The Nubian provided him with home, and he married my grandmother. He was originally from a town called Adbara, actually a village across the river of Adbara called Ummatuyur. Ummatuyur in Arabic means the mother of birds. It's called the mother of birds because it has been for millennia a resting place for migrating birds from the north to the south and back. So it is still an island in the Nile River. It is not. They decided not for people not to live there. Just leave it for the birds, and it is still there. But he after he got married, he got four children growing up in Nubia. He felt homesick for his town, so he took his family and came to Adbara. And that's where my father grew up. My grandfather, the Mahdis were very religious. They ruled using the Islamic Sharia law, and that's why the Nubian didn't like that, because it's too strict. But my father and his brothers were more attached to their father, who was religious, so they were very religious, very. So we used to pray behind my father 5 days a day, 5 times a day, and it was a strict religious house. I went to a religious Islamic school at age 4. And then I didn't like it very much, so my father took me to a Coptic Christian daycare. So it was interesting to see both at that age, to see both the Islamic version of daycare and the Christian version of daycare. It was interesting. I learned more from the Christian teachers and families that I stayed with as a child. My father did not finish primary school, but he was successful. He became a tailor, and he had 11 children with my mom, and I was the second from the bottom. So when I was growing up, my sisters were already married, and I grew up with their kids. My older brother left the home by then and went to school. In the house, my father also brought all of my paternal uncles to Adbara. Atbara was flourishing at the time because the British, when they came, they built a railroad from northern Sudan to this area here called, this area is between the Blue Nile and the White Nile. It's a very fertile area. You could see the Nile, and then you could see this dark lines. This is the railroad, and the Egyptians decided to have Atbara as the railroad city. So there was a lot of railroad industry in Atbara, and you could see Atbara. Why did they choose Atbara? Because it is the closest to the Port Sudan on the Red Sea. So Atbara was flourishing. People came from all of Africa to learn about the railroad industry. It was the largest railroad industry city in Africa at the time. So my grandfather came, got a job in the railroad industry, and we all grew up there. And my father then brought his my mother's brothers and sisters. We all were living in the same house. We had a big house. So there was about five families in the same house. So we grew up like, you know, a tribe in the same house with all the children. My aunt and uncles spoke only Nubians, but in Atbara, the school and the street language is Arabic. So we all grew up bilingual, speaking Nubian at home and Arabic outside the house and in the schools. We used to laugh at uncles and my aunts because they didn't know to speak Arabic and they had a very thick accent, so we used to laugh at them. Now my children laugh at me for my American accent. So they got back to me. Yes. Let's then growing. When a couple of my uncles, at the time, the British were kicked out of Sudan in 1956. There was a democratic government for 2 years, and there was a military coup. So I grew up during that military coup, and one of my uncles were in the Democratic Socialist Front. They were being activists against the military rule in Sudan. They resisted it. He was in and out of jail all the time, and we're wondering why was he being caught, why is he put in jail. But we grew up in that struggle. The labor union in Atbara was very strong. They wanted democratic rule. There was always a fight in there. I'm going to one of the scholars in the U.S. wrote a book about Atbara. Atbara used to be called the city of fire and steel, and that's what he called his book. It's a social history of Atbara. I'm going to read a poem that is written by Al-Hajj Abdurrahman from the book, who was at the time the president of the labor union in Atbara. The labor union in Atbara was the largest union in the Sudan. It was feared by the government, but it was always oppressed. And so he says, "You ask who I am. I am Atbara. I am the garden of the future. I am a fortress sending light from above. I am Atbara. the mother of working youth. I am Adbara, pregnant, waiting for the moment of labor. It is the melodious clinking of iron and the drops of sweat. It is the muttering lips creeping back home at dusk. It is the wrinkles of the faces returning in the evening. It lies in the midst of the tiny leaves of food. I will give birth to a giant, not created out of a blood clot. I am Adbara. My mark is in the smoke, with chest puffing out, in the blue uniforms overcrowding the roads at dawn, in the muscular forearms pressing iron against rocks, in the mighty leader penetrating veils like lightning, though resting quiet, volcanoes seethe inside me. I am Adbara, truly a capital city of iron. When my plants are blown away by the wind, flowers grow anew. Never will the soil watered by the drops of working people turn arid. Look, history embraces me as a symbol of eternal life. Never mind the judgment of the blind who denies my existence. So this is, you know, this comes from this struggle of the labor unions of the working class against the oppressive government. And this legacy is still continues in Adbara. In 2018, we had a revolution against another military dictatorship, and the uprising started in Adbara. So even though the government is started kind of tried to destroy the railroad industry, but it still survived. By the time I was in the middle school, Egypt decided to build the Aswan Dam. The U.S. categorized the dam as the worst environmental catastrophe in Africa at the time. To build the dam, Egypt wants to build the dam in the southern part near Aswan. Aswan is just the next big city in Egypt. So the lake of the dam was to drown the largest city of Nubia. And that was a devastating blow against the Nubians. 100,000 Nubians were moved out. People were revolting, protesting. Here is a picture of one of the Nubian singers in the protest. Arif Jamal wrote also about the building of the dam. But this is the environment I grew up in. It is an environment of resistance, of hard working people. From there, I went to the university in Khartoum, in the capital, studied engineering. I was involved also in the Democratic Front at the university, resisting another military dictatorship. After I graduated in civil engineering, I worked as an airport engineer in the Sudan, building and repairing airport. That was a good job because I got to travel all around the country, know all the tribes, all the people, get exposed to different cultures. After that, I came to Madison to go to graduate school. In Madison, I was involved in the union, in the graduate students union, also fighting to increase our wages, to have respect for graduate students who were not very respected at the time. After I finished graduate school, I was hired to work at the University of Maine. Maine is such a beautiful state. I enjoyed my time there. But I found this golden opportunity to come and start the composite program. I did my thesis in composite materials in Madison. So in Maine, I was working in the mechanical engineering department. It was okay, but I thought I wanted to come back to composites, and I came to Winona. I was very happy in Winona. I met a lot of people. Russ Smith is one of them. I learned a lot from Russ. I worked with on the board of directors of the Women Resource Center for many years. I was a board of directors in the co-op. I worked with Sharon and Vic Ormsby. I worked with Joe Morse. I worked with Doug Nopar. I met my wife, Margaret, here. I have many dear friends. One of them is Mark McGuire. If you know Mark, Mark had taught me everything about Winona and everything about the history of the U.S. My wife and kids made me just centered in Winona. My story, and if you... yes, I have a few images actually I wanted to share with you. So we had a military dictatorship since 1989, so it lasted about 30 years. It was a combination of military rule under Islamic Sharia law, which is very oppressive. And of course, people just use their religion to oppress the people. So there was an uprising in 2019 that toppled this regime. However, we couldn't establish a functioning democracy because the military just was still holding the power. And they were using a militia group that they used to kill the people in Western Sudan because they were rising against the government. So there were basically two armies. The militia, which has become very strong under the army, so they have been colluding and collaborating to crush this uprising. But then they became, they had been clashing over how to do that, and each one of them was aiming to seize the power. They started to fight against other, for each one to get to the power, and both of them are against the civilian uprising. So right now in Sudan, this is like the largest disaster for the last 200 years that we have seen in Sudan. About 7 million people left their homes. The militia army is not very well trained, so they basically kill all the civilians, get into their homes, loot everything, and the war is still going. We have about 3 people living in Egypt, about 4 million, I mean 3 million people in Egypt, 4 million in Chad and South Sudan. And it is really the worst disaster that we are living through.
Right.